Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. After an action-packed Brazil GP, we had less action on the news side this week, so we will preview the Abu Dhabi GP today. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Vogel. Hello everyone to episode 169 of the Fastest Lap podcast. This might be one of our shortest episodes in our podcast's history, as not many stories broke within the last race coming up. How difficult has it been for you, Vogel, to come up with new articles on GP Today, actually?
No, it's fine. I mean, breaking news isn't all we have to work off. There's plenty of stuff to cover. So it's been okay. But yeah, it has been an unusually quiet couple of weeks after the Brazil Grand Prix. So hopefully in the weekend we'll have a lot more big stories and big talking points from the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix.
Yeah, and after the Abu Dhabi GP, as we talked about in the last weeks or in the last episodes, the season is over. We are already at the season finale, and yeah, the season went so quickly. And yeah, the Abu Dhabi GP, I think it grew on us from 2010 onwards. We had some kind of up and down races in terms of excitement level. We had some really good races in Abu Dhabi, but we had some boring ones. With Red Bull's form in the last couple of races, you could expect that, especially with their performance last year in Abu Dhabi, that they could again fight against Mercedes and Ferrari. So we are again in a position where we do not know who might actually, or who will actually win the race. And I think that's really a good ingredient for an exciting GP, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when it's open like that and you don't know exactly who's going to win, it always makes it more exciting. So, like you said, Red Bull have been they've been thereabouts in the last few races. Verstappen last time out getting pole and then taking the win, so it's been a good spell for Red Bull. They've looked strong, and ultimately, I mean, all the teams are going to want to end the year on a high and bring a lot of motivation into the winter.
And Williams just want the season to be over.
Yeah, exactly. And has to, probably. So, and there's still a little bit to fight for. There's P3 in the championship between Verstappen, Leclerc, and Vettel.
Isn't Vettel, like, really far off?
He is really far off, but, when I say really far off, well, yeah, he's like 20 points, I think, or something like that. Let me check really quickly. Yeah, he's 20 points. No, sorry, he's 30 points behind. Oh, so he's out of contention. Okay, I forgot about that. So then it's only between Verstappen and Leclerc then for P3. But yeah, Verstappen is 11 points ahead. So kind of strange to think that Red Bull could finish it in third place. Yeah. Considering, I mean, at the start of the season, before the first race, if at the end of the year we'd say that Ferrari's ended in fourth and fifth in the championship, it probably would have taken quite a few people by surprise.
Many people talked about Ferrari having the strongest car for many races in the first half of the season, I think.
Yeah. Also, Gasly and Sainz, that's going to be really interesting. And Albon. Gasly and Sainz currently tied on points, on 95 points each, and then Albon is behind them on 84. So, yeah, but of course he is in the stronger car, so that should make it quite exciting to see who's going to get the P6 spot. Whether it'll be it would be really incredible if Sainz got that spot when the other two guys had half a season in the Red Bull. But Yeah, I mean, other than that, well, in the constructors, I guess we have, probably the biggest talking point is Renault and Toro Rosso, and if Toro Rosso can actually beat Renault to fifth in the championship, because they only are, what, eight points behind Renault for fifth place. McLaren, of course, well out of sight now for P4, but yeah, I think also for Renault, it's been a bit of a year to forget. They've been.
I mean, yeah. I mean, sure, 6 points is very close, but I don't know. I would just expect Renault to have a better weekend, but with the performance and form Toro Rosso showed in Brazil, who knows, right?
I mean, they only need to score what, like a P7, P8 result for Kvyat and Gasly, something like that, and then if Renault don't score points, then they'll get it. Even if they get it on, if they tie for points, Renault or Toro Rosso will still get it, because they had that P2 result with Gasly, and even P3 with Kvyat would still beat that. Yeah. So, it's been. But I mean, Renault's form in the second half of the season, to be honest, has been all right. It's been pretty good. I think they've scored points at every race, or they finished in the top 10 at every race. And then, of course, in Japan, they got disqualified from the results. I mean, even Hülkenberg. Actually, Hülkenberg's race in Brazil was the first race since the summer break where he didn't cross the line inside the top 10, which is, pretty interesting, considering this also could be his last Formula One race.
Well, which is very likely his last Formula One race.
Yeah, I mean, it's still all open, I guess, for 2021. Who knows, he could make a comeback, but if you look at his age and the young prospects that are coming through, then it's, I wouldn't bet on it. But, I mean, Robert Kubica, who maybe we'll talk about in a minute as well, I'll always going to use him as a reference. He was out of the sport for 8 years or whatever it was, and he managed to come back. So, I mean, yeah, I guess in those 8 years he did have age on his side. But yeah, who knows? But even if Hülkenberg did wait another 8 years to come back, he'd still be the same age as Kimi Räikkönen now if he came back in 8 years. So, it's a shame for him if it is going to be his last race. But yeah, also I guess exciting for Esteban Ocon, who will take over that seat.
Yeah, and if you look back on Hülkenberg's career, I'm still thinking back to 2009 when he was it 9 or was it 10 where he had the pole in
10.
In Brazil, and he was always that talent, and he remained that talent that could eventually go to a top team and maybe score victories. But he never even got a podium, and it is maybe sad isn't the right expression for it, but from a neutral perspective, you just would have hoped for him to have a better ending to his career. Now he's at Renault, a midfield team. Renault still not in the league of the top three or top four teams, to put it this way. So yeah, maybe not the career or the ending of a career he would have wished, but still, I mean, he was a Formula One driver. Not many racers can say that, and I think he will find many other opportunities outside of Formula One. So yeah, I don't think we have to worry about him.
I was like, one thing just really quickly on his career, it's interesting that he always seemed to be in the one place in the midfield, scoring points basically nearly every, well, having the opportunity to score points every race. I mean, different drivers, they move up and down or they're at the front, but like, he was just kind of always stuck there, and he has that record, and I'm not sure if that record is ever going to be beaten, to be honest. 178 race entries and 0 podiums, and I guess it'll be 179 after Abu Dhabi, unless he gets a podium in Abu Dhabi.
That would be something.
That would be incredible. That would just be one of the most amazing stories in Formula One history, I think, genuinely, because he has that such a huge record of 178 entries without a podium, and Second place is Adrian Sutil, who is 128, so 58 races behind him, or sorry, 50 races mm-hmm. behind him. You know, it's a record by an absolute margin, and that would be a pretty fairy tale ending, I think, if he managed to get a podium in Abu Dhabi. And I wouldn't count it out after we had a Toro Rosso and a McLaren on the podium in the last race. So yeah, who knows.
And also the last race for Robert Kubica, but as you touched on earlier, after being 8 years out of the sport, such an awesome story to come back with Williams. Of course, in a phase of Williams' history where, well, performance wasn't there, where they had big problems. So, yeah, he couldn't really fight for points. He only fought basically for last and second to last place with his teammate. But, I mean, looking at the whole picture, you just have to be happy for him that he made his comeback. And I think he, for himself, he achieved a really big goal of his. So I think he can live with what he achieved. And, well, now there will be a different chapter for him and his career. And there are rumors, I heard, that he might join Racing Point as a test driver or reserve driver. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, well, Haas made it very public that they were interested in signing Kubica, and Kubica was kind of quiet on the subject, but now it's understood that he will be potentially signing for Racing Point as their test and reserve driver, which you know, it's great for him to have a role in still in Formula One. And also I believe that it's quite likely that he will end up with a full-time race seat next year in DTM with BMW, which is also, you know, DTM is a pretty, it's a very high class racing category. Yep. I mean, it's probably the pinnacle of touring car racing, I guess, in the world. Well, if you want to call it
very competitive. Yeah.
But it's recognized, you know, you get drivers from all over the world. I mean, I know it is primarily a German series, but you know, just international drivers competing in there. Yeah, so.
And many big names, yeah. Pascal Wehrlein, Gary Paffert, Jamie Green, and all the guys there.
Many more. I mean, there's so many. Ocon raced there, of course, before he came to F1.
Exactly.
You know, there's loads of them there. That's how I got to know, how I got up to speed with Robert Wickens before he moved to IndyCar. Mm. You know, there's plenty of drivers that come through there, so that'd be a great feel for him to fit in. Paul DiResta, another name to throw in there, but I'm happy to see Kubica retain a role in Formula One, because
so he basically follows Häkkinen's footsteps, because Häkkinen also joined DTM after his career, I just remembered.
Yeah, he did. And he's still in his Formula One sabbatical, so yeah, I'm like I said, I'm pleased for Kubica that he is still respected enough in the paddock to be for teams to have interest in him in taking on a role, especially after the season that he's had, where, you know, it hasn't worked out how he would have hoped at all. But I think people mostly, well, they should, and hopefully they will remember that while it wasn't the successful comeback that he wanted, the car maybe was to blame for a lot of it. It was stuck at the back of the grid, so you could never really quite see him or know what was going on. But the sheer effort of him coming back anyway, I mean, we've talked about it before plenty of times. It's an amazing story, a real, real inspirational story. Really happy for him, and I think that's what people should remember him for, and I think people will remember him for that, for his great comeback, and not the disaster season that he's had, frankly. But I mean, he scored a point this year, which I guess is probably very little consolation to him. But I mean, I think we all applaud Kubica and how he came back into Formula One.
Absolutely, and I will remember just that great story of him coming back to the sport, and as you said, not with under the circumstances with Williams and their problems. You wouldn't rate Kubica that badly for that season. But, well, the last race of the season, is now coming up, and yeah, let's hope for one final great race after we had so many great races this year. So I'm really looking forward to it. Until next week then, goodbye.
Goodbye.